You are listening to episode 150 on the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, watching rumored conspiracy theories on YouTube.
Episode 150 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is August the 10th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my Teenage Mutant Ninja brother, James Furlough.
Hey there! Rocking a new mic today. Trying it out. So, you need to ask me how my weekend went.
How'd your weekend go?
Pretty much the best weekend I've had all summer.
Whoa, how did that come about?
Yeah. So, crazy, okay? So it started out where I took Friday off because I got invited to go participate in a golf tournament put on by the Willamette Valley Home Builders Association.
Cool.
So I know nothing about golf, but we're playing best ball, so it didn't matter. And they used my ball twice in the 18 holes that we played. So I got that going for me. Which that's an appropriate use of that quote since it's golf related. So, so I did that and which was fun just all on its own, but then they had a raffle at the end and totally won a Makita impact drill.
What?
Yeah, totally awesome. Drill technology has come quite a ways, by the way. We don't talk about it much on the show, but, it's kind of awesome what they've gotten drills to be able to do now.
Like what?
So like an impact drill is different than a regular drill. A, it's got like a quick release thing on it. So you can very quickly just like, you know, you let up and then it will, you know, you can change out drill bits in like half a second, which
That's
is
nice.
Pretty cool. Yeah. Really nice. And then the other thing is that what an impact drill does is it vibrates the head of it just a little bit. Yeah. So essentially, what it does is it's constantly recalibrating the drill head into the screw so that it doesn't strip it. It just is always relocking it back in just a little bit.
Nice.
And so, yeah, a lot of contractors are like, yeah, I don't use a standard drill anymore. I just use this impact drill. It works great. So, pretty sweet. Should be fun. I gotta come up with a project so I can use it. which would be good. Yeah, and then that was my Friday, by the way.
Oh,
do you
nice.
Hear a slight pop every once in a while when I'm talking?
I hear it, but... I don't hear a pop.
Okay, all right. I'm not going to worry about it. It's just me being crazy. So that was my Friday. Then Saturday morning, I woke up early, and I helped one of my neighbors do some roofing work.
Yeah.
And I've come to terms that I will. There was the pop. I've come to terms that I'm going to have to redo.
Embolism. Just to freak you out. Might be the embolism.
Oh, okay. No, I'm pretty sure it's my mic popping.
Okay.
And so, but you don't hear it. Maybe others won't either. And it's just me. Maybe if I raise it above, that'll help. I'm not sure. Anyways, I've come to terms that I'm going to have to re-roof my house at some point in time. So I kind of want to learn how to do it and figure out what's going on. So
yeah.
I got to work side by side with an actual professional roofer, which was kind of cool. And so
nice.
I learned some tricks. Very nice. And then the super exciting part of the weekend started. Maybe like a month back, HP announced that they were putting on a picnic in Corvallis, you know, for the site that I work at. And,
cool.
And so one of the guys, he is a he's a licensed pyro for putting on fireworks. And he goes, hey, I just want to put out there looking for volunteers to help me do it. And he goes, I thought I'd ask the inner circle of friends first. And he sits right, or he used to before I moved, used to sit right next to me in HP. And we'd actually go out to lunch pretty regularly. And so I knew him. I was like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll volunteer. I'll help. Shooting off fireworks sounds like fun. You know, I'm thinking show up a couple hours early. Shot for fireworks, no big deal. So, like, early last week, like Monday, he sent out this email. It's like, all right, thanks for helping out. We're starting at 10 a.m. for the setup for a 9 p.m. shoot. And he's like, make sure you've got your work gloves, closed-toed leather shoes, long-sleeve pants, long-sleeve shirt. If you got a hard hat, bring it, and safety goggles and a headlamp. And I'm like, huh. That's a little more intense than what I was originally thought. But okay, I'm still in. So we showed up. I showed up a little late. I showed up at like noon because I'm whatever. I'm like that. I was helping roof. And so so we started setting these things up. We set up a few hundred fireworks. Yeah, and they ranged all the way from like the 2-inch shells or 2.5-inch shells. We had a bunch of 3-inch shells to like 5-inch shells that shoot these things 500 feet into the air.
5-inch shells are getting up there because they only get up to like 9-inch shells.
They were not small. And then he had a whole bunch of cakes, you know, which he's like, essentially they're the ones that have like, you know, from anywhere from a dozen to, you know, like 50 little holes in them. And I'm like, and he's had to get over a set of trees for everyone to see. And I'm like, are these going to get high enough? He goes, oh yeah, it won't be a problem. I'm like, oh, all right. Yeah. He goes, no, you can't buy these. These are not consumer grade fireworks. I'm like, oh.
That's awesome.
Cool beans. So we wired about half of them together. And for a remote detonator, which you would love because of all the remote stuff, and so we're wiring stuff, and then the other half though they had to be manually lit.
Ooh,
and so I got to do two jobs. For the first half of the show, my job was, well, it was originally to look in the air and try to find shells that had not exploded and like be the spotter for like, here's where they landed. Very quickly, my job turned into firefighter because we were doing it over dry grass. And it was like at like less than a minute into it, we had a fire started like 20 feet behind us. And so I'm like grabbing the fire extinguisher and going over and putting out that fire. And then he does the first round of the big shells. And the very first one sets off a fire right next to it. And he's like, put that fire out. And so I'm like, I'm running over there with this fire extinguisher. And, you know, it's just the big one with the water in it. And I'm like, I'm putting it out. And they're still firing off these 5-inch shells, like, right next to me. And I'm going, oh, my gosh. Okay. And, like, I got fire raining down on top of me. And I'm trying to put out the grass. And, you know, just insane. Jessie posted a video on Facebook of it. And it's like, it's crazy. And then finally, my awesome wife was helping me the entire time, by the way, the only girl there. And so for the second half of it, they were like, you know, they had asked me ahead of time. They're like, James, you want to light some? I was like, yeah. And so she's got this sweet video of me, like, I've run it over. I got this huge, like, butane lighter, you know, or propane lighter, I think that's the same thing. You know, this big lighter, and you, like, got to throw off the sheaf, and then I got to light it, and then I have to turn away as fast as I can as this, essentially, cannon goes off next to me. And then once it goes off, turn around and light the next one.
That's awesome.
And keep moving. And so I'm doing that. There's another guy doing that exact same thing. And then there's the dude in charge who has the remote who's lighting off other stuff. So it just seems like a war zone down there.
That's awesome. I'm thinking about joining a fireworks society where they make fireworks. And they were telling me about the difference between how can you tell a new guy versus an old guy when they're doing fireworks. And I was like, I don't know how he goes. So new guys light like this, and he leans over, arm out really far, you know, just like stretching out as far as he can. And he goes, old guys light like this, and he turns around and he reaches out as far as he can behind him. Like, that makes sense. But
yeah, no, it was
awesome.
Pretty crazy.
That's really cool.
Yeah, a ton of people said it was the best show they've ever seen, I'm happy to say that I was a part of that and actually got to light off some. It was pretty cool.
So do you think you're going to do it more? Did it light the fire within you?
Was there a
spark of excitement?
Yeah, what was funny about it is, like, it was, like, 7 p.m., and we were still working and had, like, an hour to go. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is so much work, totally not worth it. I never want to do this again. You know, because it was just hot, and I mean, you can see I'm sunburnt, and because I wasn't thinking. And I was just like, yeah, I'm not going to volunteer next time. About a minute after we had finished, I was like, so when's the next one? Let's do this. Because it was pretty fun. It was pretty wild.
Cool.
But yeah, it was a good show. Fireworks are another interesting technology that we don't talk much about, but clearly there is a science to blowing things up.
Oh,
in,
yeah.
In it. Yeah, pretty sweet. But yeah, it was a good weekend, man. Good weekend. Oh, and then just to round things out, we did a little mini camp out in our backyard because we had the tent set up. We were like, why not? So we did that. And then the topper on top of it all was today in church. Our pastor used a Star Wars quote to make his point.
Nice.
Star Wars Episode One, no less, found meaning and depth in that movie from Qui-Gon Jinn speaking some truth to little Anakin. Your focus is your reality, by the way. Okay.
Interesting.
You're just in shock that something meaningful came out of episode one.
Little... Yeah, that's exactly. I'm not even going to acknowledge it. I'm still upset. My little in my fraternity is getting married next weekend, so he had his bachelor party this weekend, and it was a bit of an extravaganza. We went gun shooting and go-kart racing and food eating and beer drinking.
Wow.
One of those marathons of a day. But I do got to say this, man. Taking pictures and videos at the gun range, me on my iPhone 5, my other friends on their 5Ss, makes me want an iPhone 6 really bad.
Really?
Because their pictures and videos are so much better than me, it wasn't even funny. I mean, especially
well,
with like, the burst.
We should talk about that later today.
Yeah, talking about like the burst pictures and the slow mo stuff. It was not just picture quality. I mean, it was out of control. But you know what, James? This week, that's the sort of thing we're here to talk about is iPhone 6s, not
yes
awesome weekends and fireworks. Fireworks maybe. But so this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they are developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James wants to reiterate that he works for HP.
But I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Nice. That is good to know. If you want to follow us throughout the week and see all sorts of videos and pictures and stuff like that of us firing guns or fireworks or those sorts of extravaganzas, you can.
Yeah.
We are available all the time. You can even get
24/7.
You can even get test tweets from me trying to turn on my lights. But all over the place. Go to the internet. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. My Instagram is nextwiggin4, NextWiggin.
So, for those of you who aren't following us on the Furlow Bros, Twitter account, there was a tweet that came across my phone. It said, "This is a test." And
yeah.
I was like, did our account get hacked? What's going on? I didn't tweet anything out. That didn't seem like something Matthew would tweet out. Well, it turns out it is something Matthew would tweet out. Because you got a new toy, or you installed the new toy that
I
think we've talked about.
Yeah, so last week I talked about I got the Philips Hue. And this week I've been turning it on and hooking it up to If This Then That and just testing it out and seeing if I like it. And
do you?
I do. I do like it a lot. They, you know, it's funny. So there's two features that are awesome. Number one, the geofencing is great. I don't turn my lights on and off anymore. They just turn on and off for me automatically.
Wow. How big is the fence?
I don't know. It's good enough where I've.
I guess it's LED. You don't care too much, huh?
Not at all. I mean, it's one of those things where it's.
How do you know it actually turns off?
Because I can look it up online. I mean, it tells me it's off. It may not be off, but you know, if it thinks it's off. Because yeah, that crossed my mind too. And then the other thing, and this is actually even that is a cool feature, but it's I don't know if it's worth the money. The feature that is really worth the money though, and I think has kind of sold me on at least having one set of Hues, is the fact that I have an incredibly hard time waking up before I absolutely have to. And as I'm training for a Tough Mudder right now, waking up about an hour early and working out, or even just a half hour early, is hugely beneficial. And what I've got it set up right now is when my alarm goes off in the morning, I've got it set off to go off way too early and wake me up so I can go work out. And generally, that wouldn't work. So what I've done is I've got the Hue set up to start to turn on over the course of 5 minutes, 5 minutes before my alarm goes off. So basically what happens is
that's
my
pretty fast.
Light dims. What?
It sounds like pretty fast. Sunrise.
Well, yeah, but it's not fast enough to wake me up because it doesn't just come on. It slowly dims on. And then when it's fully on, my phone alarm goes off, and now the lights are on in my room. And it arouses me rather quickly. So it's actually very cool. I like it a lot. But yeah, the idea of being able to, like, when I send tweets to the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, actually, you know what? This is a great example. If you're watching on the YouTube, you'll see what's going to happen. Let's go. If this, then that. And what should I say?
Broadcasting now.
Live. Check us out. Okay. And then, so I send that. Now it's going to...
Hey, I just got a tweet from Furlough Bros. Hey, I'll stop talking. Talk.
Wow, okay. So, yeah, as if you're paying attention, my room is doing a little bit of a dance right now, and my Hue is just blinking every time I send a text or I send a tweet, which isn't really like – that's like the reverse of what you want. Yeah, I should have it blink when somebody I'm trying to follow tweet text or something, but, you know, I'm still
gotta start somewhere.
Yeah, it's just it's a proof of concept, but it's pretty cool. I like
it.
It
is cool. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, anytime you're tagged on Facebook, have it blink.
Yeah.
You could just be blinking all day. That's cool. So if you do want to see things like that and other such things, mine is at James Furlough on Twitter and jamesfurlough.com and James Furlough elsewhere.
Nice. If you want all of the clicks and links to everything that goes on, the center of our internet world is furloughbros.com. Go there. We all the links for all the articles and videos and stuff that we're going to talk about will be there. Check them out. Learn something good. And yeah, it's awesome.
Question for you. Have you ever used Yahoo Groups before?
Yahoo Groups? No. No, I haven't.
Okay. Because I got an invite from our extended family to join an extended family Yahoo group.
I've been ignoring that, yes.
Yeah, okay. I'm just trying to figure out why Yahoo.
Because somebody else set it up.
Yeah, I'm not an expert at this, but I feel like Facebook already has all of these capabilities and does it better. A, they have a mobile app, so there's that. I feel like, but okay.
Well, yeah, but James, it's Facebook, and then some of our family members would have to sign up for Facebook, or we could do Google, and then Google would get even more information about us. I don't know. You know, I know exactly what it is. Is whoever set it up has a Yahoo email, and they just go through Yahoo. Yahoo's a good company, James. It's led by a good CEO. They're going in the right direction. I'm willing to give it a chance. And right on the side banner, we have a personalized news stream, Get the App. Oh, that's something completely different. Never mind. But, yeah.
They're making a comeback. They're looping us in.
Yeah. It's all right. I like to see them trying and succeeding. I don't hate it.
Okay.
What was that? There's something I was going to say, though. Oh, man. I helped fix our parents' computer this afternoon.
What was wrong with it?
Somebody downloaded something but they got a they got like those impossible to remove extensions that just
Yeah, I love those.
Oh jeez, yeah, you delete it and you do you set everything right and then you close Chrome, you open back up and everything's reset. Oh jeez, super annoying. You uninstall it, it's still there. The only way I've ever figured out how to like how to I can't figure out how to like destroy them completely, but I figured it you can usually disable them pretty good if you just go through and like delete most of their file hierarchy so that the file is still there, so the program thinks it's still there, but it's just completely broken, and then things normally go back. But that might leave some sort of a larger security hole. I don't really know.
Yeah.
But it's Windows 8. It just doesn't affect me on my Mac, so what do I care?
True.
It's funny. I told a couple people that I was doing that, and they're like, why don't you just have your parents buy a Mac? They don't have to deal with it. Like, securities, guys. Like, not just your not smart aleck. You actually, you know, pretending, which I thought was funny.
Man, We tried.
Yeah, well, I think the convincing might be done by the guys that are trying to steal our parents' computers. So, anyways, speaking of which,
well, the problem it's this bad cycle, right? Where they're frustrated with the computer, they don't like it, and so they're not willing to spend money to get a good one because they don't like the computer.
Yeah,
and it's hard to explain to them, like, no, trust me, spend money on a upfront, and it will you'll feel better about it later on. But that's a tough sell for anybody on some of those tech changes where you're like, yeah, I get it. You're annoyed with your phone or your computer. You need to not buy the lowest end one. That's why you're annoyed with it.
Yeah. That was always something I've had friends, I've been in relationships where that was done. And, you know, it was always, you couldn't afford what you really wanted. So you bought something that you could afford that was a fraction of what you wanted. And you were just so disappointed with it. Like, why did you do that? Why you like, this is inevitable. This was going to happen. Oh,
my,
crazy.
My wife did that where I remember when we started college, you know, we both had PCs and I spent significant sums of money on mine and she did not. And hers lasted like 2 years and mine lasted all through college. And I loved mine the entire time. I even used it after college for a few years. And she was just like constantly frustrated with hers and like, this thing's so dumb and lame. And I was like, that's what happens when you buy an underpowered plasticky piece of garbage. It just doesn't, it is frustrating. I agree. And in the end, I actually end up spending less money. Because mine lasted 3 rounds of hers. And then when we finally got married, that's where I was like, okay, an end to that. You were buying what I would buy now. And we're going to spend the money up front.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely, I find that it's like, you know, whatever.
Which is this new conundrum I'm finding coming up here, right? Because I'm ready for a new phone. And I'm like, do I stick with Apple, the tried and true? Or do I jump over to Android so I can enjoy the absolutely cheap awesomeness of Republic Wireless. It's a conundrum.
It is a conundrum. But the nice part about that conundrum is it's going to come to a head pretty soon here because iPhone 6 will be announced on September 9th or the iPhone 6 generation.
That's coming so fast.
It's going away?
That's coming so fast.
That is, yeah. It's literally less than a month away. I mean, it's brutal.
It is, literally.
Yeah, literally. I'm very excited for it because I want, you know, an iPhone.
Are you going to get a new phone? Are you going to
upgrade? Oh, yeah. I've been saving for it, man. You kidding me? I got the cashola packed away. So this is my plan. I got a plan, and this is what my plan is. I'm playing, Stan. I've been shoving money and socking money away pretty much since I started saving to switch over to T-Mobile. I've been a portion of that has been also just sort of like in preparation for the iPhone 6. And so right now, come on, I've got $455 set aside specifically for the phone transition. And then I've got a relatively intact iPhone 5. So what my plan is, I'll go into the T-Mo store. I'll buy the iPhone 6 on contract. I'll pay off the first $500 right there. I'll have my iPhone 5 still with me. I'll sell that on the eBay, pay off the balance, walk away at the how I like to be, scot-free, contract-free, just, you know, ready to enjoy the bounty of my unlimited internet and wicked awesome phone.
Sounds like a good plan.
It is my plan, and it is a good plan. I'm going to have to get a but, you know,
I'm just going to put mine on credit and figure out how to pay for it later.
Oh, yeah. That's a good plan.
No, I'm not going to do that.
I was going to say, sounds like the sort of thing you would do. If that's the one thing, that's one thing I could always count on you to do, is buy things on credit and figure out how to pay for it later. I'm saving ahead of time. It's one of those things where, I don't know. I feel like we kind of know what's going to happen already, and we could get
I love how the NFC rumors keep popping up, and we all know they're not going to happen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's just like, and it's starting to become a drumbeat of the NFC stuff, and I don't get why people are so dead set on thinking that that needs to happen. Like, I just
can't
get it.
They literally cannot think outside the box of what else could they be doing. You know,
yeah.
So you come back to the tried and true. I'm kind of shocked we haven't seen the haptic touchscreens. I love those rumors. Because I just start imagining.
I'm going to say, except I already told you how they're going to do it this generation. They're going to get those really, it's going to be a really sophisticated vibrator inside of, the little motor. It's going to be a variable speed vibrators, variable frequency vibrators, so you can do different, different vibrations as you touch it and gives different feels. You know, it's not a terrible idea. Gets back to your impact drill, same concept, but with your finger and touching. It's an interesting question about all the different stuff. I think, why would Apple break the mold right now and do anything that's, you know, not just iterative improvements on what's there? Better glass, bigger screen, better touch scanner, better camera, better processor.
Yep.
You know, same battery life, you know, that is good enough. If everybody was like, you know, drumbeat of, no, it's got to be the super coolest thing ever. I don't know. I'm just
it would
looking
be okay
at
it. If it was the super coolest thing ever. I mean, yeah, I would accept that.
Yeah, but it doesn't need to be that, so Apple's not going to make that. They'll wait till the 6S to give that cool new feature.
It's always just one gen out.
Yeah, so close. But yeah, that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that.
I don't know, though. That Moto X is still pretty tempting. No, the phone itself is not... I mean, it looks like a good phone. I don't want to knock it. It looks like a good phone. It's the wireless plan that's the tempting part for me. But
so, and that, just your refreshes really quick. What is the wireless plan on that?
RepublicWireless.com. Check her out. It is... What are their plan rates? I will tell you them exactly. Republic, not services, that does my trash. I want wireless. And so they give you like three phones to choose from. It's amazing. Where are my... The website doesn't make it... Here we go. So for $5 a month, you get unlimited talk, text, and data over Wi-Fi.
What does that mean, data over Wi-Fi?
So you can't get cellular data.
Okay.
Yeah, it's imagine you're semi in airplane mode, but you can talk and text unlimited.
Okay. I got it.
But for $10 a month, you still get unlimited talks and text. And, I'm sorry. For $5, it's unlimited talks, text, and data over Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
So all three of those are over Wi-Fi. Sorry, I did not. Yeah, pretty crazy, huh? So it's essentially an iPod Touch with texting options. And they've, and apparently Republic Wireless, which is why it has to use an Android, because they install their own little special software in there that, that allows you to do text and talk over Wi-Fi. That's part of the reason why they can make it so cheap, because they make you, you know, they encourage people to do it over wireless, which means in theory you can text on an airplane and also talk if it weren't frowned upon. So for $10 a month, you can get unlimited talks and text over cellular as well, and then data is still over Wi-Fi.
Okay.
For $25 a month, which is the one I would probably choose, it's unlimited text and talks over the cell and unlimited data over 3G.
Nice.
Which is essentially what I have right now, except it's not unlimited. But for $40, you can sip off the 4G pipe.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, so, what's their coverage?
It's Sprint.
Oh, okay. So terrible. Got it.
It's no worse than T-Mobile.
For you.
For me, correct.
I would say
in my area, Sprint and T-Mobile are exactly the same from a coverage standpoint.
Yeah. In my area, Sprint's a joke, and T-Mobile's as good as the big two.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, and then you can get the Moto X, just a plain vanilla type. You can build your own for $350. Or you could get the cute little Moto G for $150. No contracts.
That's not bad.
No, from a price standpoint, pretty darn amazing.
Yeah.
And I know one guy who has it. He's actually sits right next to me at work. He has this exact plan. And every time I look at it, I'm just like, oh, that's pretty cool. But that's because I care about money too much. But not enough that I'm not going to wait until September 9th to figure out what Apple's bringing to the table.
Good.
The real question is, should I stick with AT&T or not? But that's...
No.
I know. I should genuinely look into it, like, before September 9th. But, Anyways, September 9th, huh? That'll be cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be awesome.
I'm looking forward to it as well. So, how about this? AOL is suing a guy named something Woods. I'm sure he's got a Jonathan Woods. Okay, they're suing him. I love this. Again, this is AOL is suing Jonathan Woods because he charged AOL for providing unnecessary services. AOL had no need for them. And they didn't want them, but yet he was charging them for this. Turns out he was an employee who, this is clearly fraudulent, created a company that he then decided to hire on as a consultant to do his job. Essentially.
Nice.
And so instead of his regular pay, he charged like $1 million.
Mm.
And again, highly illegal. But it's kind of funny that AOL is suing this guy for getting rich by billing for services nobody wanted and nobody needed.
Given the fact that... I think I know where this is going.
Yeah, no, he's there. I like the way this writer put it. He goes, so in other words, they're suing him for AOLing AOL.
Yeah, that's...
Because that's exactly what their business model was with those CDs. Now, at the beginning, it had value, but I would say near the end, and they still have customers who are signed up and paying AOL.
I was gonna say, I heard this week that they had a that right now it's like they have like 2 million customers that pay like $20 a month. It was like 2.3 million customers, I think is the number. It's off the top of my head, unfortunately, but it was like $20 a month. And they said that because all the hardware is out there and everything, and everything's all paid off and depreciated and everything, it's just pure profit.
Yes.
It's all for dial-up service. And they're basically making $40 million of just raw, unadulterated profit from dial-ups.
That's not bad.
Customers that never cancel their $20 a month dial-up.
This guy wanted a slice of the pie. I can't blame him.
Yeah, seriously, man. It's it's do as I say, not as I do. That's, you know, you can't be like that long enough and not expect other people to learn, you know? It's like when your kid starts smoking cigarettes. Why did you learn to smoke cigarettes? I learned from you, Dad.
Really. Yeah, no, this guy's total Superman 3 type of deal, kind of.
Yeah.
I'm going to create a shell company. That's me. To do my job. So they were like, yeah, we pay him twice. Once for salary and once when he outsourced his responsibilities to himself.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I know. Man. It is a violation of the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Conspiracy Act.
Bummer.
So it's illegal. You're not allowed to do that for those of you trying to get ideas. Awesome as it sounds, it is highly illegal. But at the same time, just the overarching concept of what's going on is pretty funny.
Now, what about this? What happens if he actually outsourced it to one of his buddies who worked at a different company? He legitimately outsourced it.
Uh-huh.
And
his buddy's
so
giving him kickbacks?
No. His buddy is now doing his work. He's not doing the work anymore. But because his buddy's busy now doing his work, he does his buddy's work. So he gets paid a salary. The company's paying his buddy at Comcast to do his work. So now as a separate company, and then on the side, he is doing his buddy's work, his buddy's Comcast work. So now, is that legal?
As long as you are fully disclosing all of your relationships, personal or business-wise, it's okay.
How loud do I have to disclose them? Can I whisper them kind of quietly to myself? Oh, by the way, I know this guy.
No, probably not. Probably got to get a couple signatures and approvals on there. No, that's the name of the game, right? Disclose everything, and as long as if everybody knows the entire story of what's going on and they're still okay with it, you're okay with it.
Nice.
You know, so it's in theory, he could have done this as long as, you know, if his boss or boss's boss, I don't know how high it needs to go here, you know, if they knew about it and were okay with it, in theory, he would be okay. Where he got in trouble is he didn't tell people how he was doing it.
Mm.
Which is why I make the HP disclosure that serves two purposes. Number one, it's to tell, hey, here's my relationship to this company. And two, it's because I read through the handbook and confirmed with my bosses saying, hey, P.S., I do this. Is that okay that you fully know? And they're like, yeah, as long as you give the disclosure, you're fine. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, and so that's one of the reasons why I give that disclosure is because my bosses all know and they told me to do that, which I'm okay with.
Yeah.
They're okay with it. So, yeah, it gets pretty funky pretty quick. You see this in all sorts of fields. You know, real estate is clearly an interesting one because agents know people and have friends. And, you know, anytime they're selling a house to and from a friend, they have to tell the other party, hey, I know this person. You do see it a lot with the consulting stuff because it can get potentially dicey pretty quickly. But, yeah. And there are definitely some shady people out there who they will play that line pretty close, like you were talking about. They'll do what you suggested and go, oh, don't worry about it because it's once removed, so it must be fine. It's like, well, it's not.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not okay.
Disclosure is important, man. Anytime you're uncertain, you got to tell everyone what you're doing, and as long as they're all okay with it.
Yeah, and to bring this back around, you hear that, AOL? You're supposed to tell your customers that you're still charging them money. That's what we're saying, jerks. So I got a question.
Okay.
Did you hear about the Impossible Drive?
No.
The Impossible Space Drive.
Oh.
NASA tech.
I feel like I did. But then it's not quite as cool as what I thought it was originally.
What did you think it was?
Like in a little model rocket that can take us to the moon for a relatively low cost.
Okay, how is it not that? Did I miss something?
Oh, it's awesome. It's like, well, it's the scale that they did it at is...
Ah, yes. It's quite small.
It would be nice if it were a larger scale.
Yes, yes, yes. But this is just a proof of concept. So basically what happened was is there's this dilemma that you have in physics that makes space travel kind of difficult. And it's this idea that for every action, there is an equal but opposite reaction. And so in order to move things through space, what we have to do is we have to push against something else effectively. So when you're on the planet surface of the Earth, you can like sit there and you can like jump up and down, and you know you're pushing against the Earth, and the Earth is so big that it just stays where it is. But if you want to say, I don't know, go into space, you then have to eject something with a little more
force,
energy, and that would be, you know, in the case of rocket ships, you would take this gas, you'd combust it, turn it into super hot gas, and you expel the gas. And so that mass is leaving the rocket ship, and that's what you're pushing against as you go into space. Well, once you're in space, same problem that you have. If you want to keep rocketing, you got to keep throwing stuff out. And then, you know, if you're not great with physics, you might ask the question, well, why don't we just so the dilemma is, as you rocket, you basically need fuel in order to be throwing things off. And you could do it with anything. You could get big chunks of metal and throw chunks of metal off, and that would propel you forward. Or you could do it with ions and shoot ions off. But ultimately, you need something to throw out. And, you know, if you're not great with physics, you might ask the question, why don't you just put, like, a catch behind it and then catch it, and you can just reuse it so you don't have to keep getting more.
Yeah.
The problem is that the very act of catching it takes all the momentum that you gained from throwing it, and it stops it. So it'd be like, you know, it's sort of like setting up a fan, you know, on a if you take a boat with a sailboat, you put a fan on it. Why doesn't that blow you forward? Well, it's because the fan's pushing you backwards. The wind is, you know, catching the sail and pushing you forwards. Yeah, and it neutralizes it.
Huh.
Theoretically, it would just stay still. It wouldn't move. Now, and the reality of it is actually because there's loss
of energy, you might actually go backwards, huh?
Yeah, the fan would actually push you backwards, more than likely, which is, you know, not what you're going for.
And fans are heaters, so I'm not totally surprised. Fans are heaters.
It's true.
Was listening to this semi-side note here. There's this late-night radio show. I can't remember the name of it, but it's like after 9 o'clock or after 10 o'clock, something like that, that it comes on, and it's perfect for when you got to drive home and it's late, because they talk about all sorts of crazy stuff. And
you're talking about Coast to Coast AM.
I am. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's the name of it. So
yeah,
clearly.
You want to know how I know the name of it? Because it starts at 9 p.m. or like 10 p.m. And I always thought it was Coast to Coast AM because it was on AM radio. But that's not why they call it that. It's because it's a New York show and it's on at the beginning of the AM. It starts at midnight. But because we're on the West Coast, we get it at 9 p.m. Yeah, so continue.
Got it. Interesting. Yeah, so they talk about it's a pretty wild show.
That's great.
Like I said, it's entertaining, and so it's good for when you're driving home and it's late at night and you're like, oh, I just want to be home. You get this and you're like, all right, I'm on to it. And the guy has, you know, different speakers. So it was like a couple weeks ago, or was it last Wednesday? No, it couldn't have been last Wednesday. It might have been. Anyways, I was driving home from a church event, and he was on, and they were talking about how apparently, NASA is one organization that, you know, obviously does space travel and exploration, but then there is another secret space organization that is like 50 years ahead of NASA and the known universe or something. And they've already solved all of these, space travel conundrums, and they can go, you know, like Mach 70, and they've got secret spacecrafts that use like zero energy. And I was like, really? We somehow believe that there's a secret space agency out there that has all these ships that are flying around that are all secret, that none of us know about, using technology that is literally like half a century ahead of everything else, and somehow none of those people have gotten out in the last, you know, how many years since we're doing the space travel to tell anybody about it? When we learn about the NSA after, what, they've been doing it for like 5 years? You know, they kept that a secret?
These are the sort of people that believe that the world is run by lizard people that are in disguise.
Oh, but okay. I love it. I love it. Well, no, these guys have seen it, okay? They have, like, they've seen it with their own eyes, okay? Mm. They were, like, they were up hiking in the mountains, and they saw the mountain open up James Bond style, and ships and rockets come out of it and then close back up again. They saw it with their own eyes.
Yeah. You know what my problem is that, like, this is like an open strategy of some of your really super high-tech advanced, you know, research groups, like, you know, in the Air Force and in NASA and in the FBI. If there's like top secret like weapon systems they don't want people to know about, but they're really hard to cover up, what they'll do is they'll let people like this talk about them. But they'll do things like redact big parts of, like, for example, let's say you've got this cool top secret equipment in that you're testing at high altitudes, you know, just testing equipment to track weather stuff, and you have it attached up, I don't know, a weather balloon, and the equipment falls out of the sky, and you're kind of freaking out about it. You're like, oh shoot, because a bunch of people find it. What you do is you go, okay, we're gonna grab all this stuff. We're gonna write big reports on it. We're gonna talk about what it is in the reports. It's just test equipment on a weather balloon. Then we're gonna redact big
parts. Hey, are you still there? Hello. I'm losing you.
And then we're going to pretend like we're
hey, slow down.
And we're going to tell somebody secretly. Hey.
Matthew? Hello?
Yeah.
You were massively there? Broken up. Can you lower your bandwidth or something? Because
I just did.
Okay. Hopefully now it won't freak out.
I would lower your bandwidth as well if I were you.
Okay, I did some. I could do it even more. We'll just be talking heads. It'll be good. Okay, so you were just saying, you know, they'll have like the test balloon come up, and so they'll write the whole report and then redact a whole bunch of it, and then you stopped.
Yeah, and then basically at that point, you know, it'll kind of take care of itself, but if it doesn't, what you do is you go to some dude in the middle of Arizona, you walk up to him, and you just say, hey, by the way, I heard that it's aliens that they've got over at that airbase at Area 51. And then 50 years later, nobody cares about the secret technology that you're trying to cover up. They only care about aliens. I'm like a big believer that there are cover-ups in America, and that that they're almost universally some sort of cool weapon system that we just don't want anybody to know about, probably for good reason. But they basically let people run away with the idea that they're aliens, you know, unidentified flying objects. How did we get here? It's totally off topic. But I told you
it kind of was. I warned you because you were talking about NASA developing this new tech. I'm like, actually, it's old tech that they're finally releasing to us. Was kind of my angle.
I got you. Okay, I track what you're laying down. But yeah, I'm actually a big believer that that's sort of that there's a certain that, you know, if you want, it's sort of like the contrail stuff. One of the big dilemmas that with the contrails is that there are satellite images of these contrails that are like a little bit longer than they should be, and because like contrails disperse after a certain amount of time, so the length of the contrail, if you measure it, you can say, okay, this is how fast the vehicle was going. And they're like measured contrails that would indicate the planes are going at like, not just like sort of fast, but like Mach 30, like just ridiculous speeds where they're like crossing the United States in in minutes. And like you sit there and you go like, this is indisputable evidence of something. And most people jump to it's like, oh, it's gonna be aliens. It's gonna be some sort of high technology. You're like, no, it was some sort of crazy, you know, theoretical. As far as we're concerned, they're these theoretical jet stuff, but somebody with $500 million to develop a new jet for the Air Force was coming up with a motor, and they tested it out, and they're like, wow, it worked. It went really fast. And we don't particularly want anybody to know about it, so, well, yeah, okay, there's physical evidence of it, but it doesn't matter. You just let everybody think it's aliens, and nobody thinks twice about it.
Interesting.
And actually, the biggest one that I know of that they used to do this with was they were testing out this these helicopters where they would they were jet propelled helicopters, because generally a helicopter, like, if you know how they work, you got the blades, they're attached to a motor, the rotor spins around because the motor's propelling it. That's how basically all helicopters work. But there was this idea that, what if we were to put jet engines on the ends of the blades facing opposite directions?
Oh, that's crazy.
Well, and it actually works really well. But it has this weird byproduct of the jets at the very end get all bright because they're these jet engines at the end, and they're moving so fast that they create these circles of light, especially at night. And so they fly these things around as like these test helicopters, and people would freak out and be like, you know, and be basically like they're aliens, because they'd be having hovering light circles at night. And then they'd land them, and the Air Force was like, well, we could tell everybody what it was, but this is like top secret technology. We're not supposed to tell them we have it. So they just let everybody run with the fact that they were aliens. It's just like, I mean, it's just so common. Like, we do the work for, like, you don't even need to try to convince people that they're aliens. We'll jump to that conclusion on our own. And as soon as people are saying it's aliens, it's all stupid. We just we forget that there's anything behind it, and we move on. Anyways, that's completely besides the point. So basically what happened was, talking about, you know, so the big dilemma in space travel is actually how do you keep enough fuel on board to throw out in order to go forward. Well, they just came up with this idea,
right.
And this guy decided he could build it, which was basically NASA wanted to test a new type of space drive, and it basically this was the idea. You'd have this, like, conical, or you'd have this, basically, you'd manufacture this thing, this enclosed space, that would have a particular architecture to it, that when you energize it, it would inject microwaves, and those microwaves would hit the inside of the can in such a way that they would disproportionately apply force to one side of the can as opposed to the other side of the can. That's the easiest way to explain it. And this is the theory of how it would work. And the byproduct of that would be a force in one direction that would actually push it forward, but wouldn't eject the material. And so what's really cool about this is, if it theoretically works, it doesn't break any of the known laws of physics, because there's a conservation of momentum, there is a conservation of energy, you're not creating anything, which is the biggest problem that you come across. This it's just this weird idea of being able to, or actually that's not true. The one law of physics that sort of does kind of break, that we're not quite sure, is the one of the first law of motion, that for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. But Newton's been wrong about other stuff, so why can't he be wrong about this? And basically what happened was, is they went through and they tested this thing, and they're like, yeah, it's totally works. It actually definitely works. And what's cool about this idea is that if you can scale this up to a they did a test run, like you said, and they basically measured micronewtons, like 40 micronewtons, which is tiny. It's basically imperceptible except on the most sensitive of devices, which is what they used to test it. But this thing's scalable, so you can add more stuff to it, or more energy to it, more, you know, bigger stuff, bigger designs, other types of things, and theoretically you could make an actual thruster that doesn't lose any energy. And what's exciting about this is that it doesn't have to be very much force in order for this to work really well, because what you can do is, if you got solar panels that are collecting energy, you add energy to the system, you get momentum out, you get the, mm-hmm. the spaceship or the satellite, whatever. But because you're never running out of material to eject, you're constantly gathering energy from the sun, you can constantly be have a force, which is constant acceleration. And basically what they said was...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, what's really exciting about this is that, so instead of like, you know, the current plan to get to Mars is, you'd have one really, really powerful boost of thruster boost. You put all this fuel into space, and then you just light it all off, and you'd get as far as, you'd get as much speed as you can, and then you just coast all the way to Mars. Basically, you'd have a little bit of extra fuel for directing it as you get in close. This idea, though, you could accelerate the entire, well, you could accelerate the first half of the way there, turn around, and then decelerate the rest of the way down, and this entire time you're going way faster than you could have been going. So this would majorly cut down on the length of a Mars trip from where they're talking like a 2 year, 3 year round trip to 6 months, including the time that you'd be on Mars. And it's just it suddenly takes a Mars trip for humans from, you know, very difficult, very expensive, very dangerous to doable in the near term, which is exciting and crazy. The weird part about this is that they don't really know how it works. what they did was they tested a few other things. They tested what they called the null drive, which was a drive that was similar in design, except it didn't have this crazy architecture, and this produced the same effect. They tested what's called a Kana drive. It's called the Kana drive is the one they were testing. They also tested the M drive, which is a similar design, different, but it works on a different idea, had similar results. So what they're finding is that they're trying these different things and it's working, but they've got no idea why. There's no physics that explains it, which is actually super exciting, especially considering that this year, basically, all the hopes of new exciting physics were crushed when the Large Hadron Collider actually found the Higgs boson. Like, you know, the worst thing in physics is finding what you expect. So to find this like new revolutionary, like potentially revolutionary way of producing thrust, and we have no clue why it works, is pretty cool. Especially because it's sort of like semiconductors. There's no known physics that explains semiconductors, but we know they work. We test them all the time. We come up with all these different ways of doing it. Like, it works, so let's do that. But what's really exciting about this, and this is just blows my mind, and the reason why I bring up semiconductors is because it's not just because they work under similar physics in that the category of physics, but this thing, basically you run electricity through it. It energizes the microwaves and it causes a force. Well, somebody asked the question, what happens if you were to make this thing out of a semiconductor, or not a semiconductor, but a superconductor instead of a normal conductor like it is? Well, the answer is that the energy, there'd be zero resistance for the energy passing through it. So the force that it would be creating would be a zero energy force. There's a jump in physics that I don't really understand, but basically the end result is that you would be able to basically have this thing like exist on Earth as a counterforce to the Earth and to the gravitational pull, and basically what happens is, in order for it to move, in physics, you know, in order to have a change of energy, you have to have things move, right? Either is up higher and it gets more potential energy, or you get kinetic energy. As long as it's not moving, you can have it be applying all the forces that you want it to be to, but as long as it's not moving, we're fine. We're not breaking any laws of physics. So basically what happens is, if this thing is superconductive, you got a bunch of energy running through it, but it's not costing you anything, it's producing a bunch of microwaves, and it's producing a force, but it wouldn't move. It would just be a static object, and you could literally put it in space, and it would be a static object. And why that matters is
like the Jetsons homes type thing.
Well, I mean, more specifically, if you built a car around it, the car would hover and
or a skateboard.
Or a skateboard. And it would cost at zero. It would do so at zero energy costs.
That's kind of nice.
Making things superconductive is kind of hard because you got to make it super cold
today.
And it's kind of expensive. Yeah, exactly. But these are two areas of physics that we don't really get. We don't understand how it works. And if we get these working theories of them that sort of explain high temperature semiconductor or superconductors and to explain this sort of stuff, we theoretically could start building these like legit hoverboard stuff, like hover cars that don't require thrust, that don't require, I mean, like, this could actually change transportation on a level that will make computers seem goofy in how much we thought they changed the world. I mean, it's just like, this is huge. This is actually huge. This is the sort of discovery that will turn humanity into a spacefaring race. I mean, like, it actually makes exploring the solar system, at the very least, a reasonable expedition. It makes potentially transportation just like, you know, it basically turns everything into airplanes. Like, it's one of those things where 200 years from now, this could have been the biggest week in history, and we just didn't know it yet.
Dang. I knew it was a good week.
Yeah, this is a huge deal, and the downside to it is, because we don't get it at all, it's going to be a really long time until we see something really practical happen from it. At the same time, there's more and more pent-up demand to try to build up the space program again. It's a pretty exciting thing, so there's potential money there, real money, to work on this sort of a development. So, I don't know, it's crazy exciting, you know, especially if you're into this sort of thing. But,
that does sound crazy exciting. That's interesting. I mean, yeah, sure, they don't understand it a whole lot, but if it's got promise to it and therefore excitement around it, you'll get the resources to figure out what's going on. And maybe they'll involve graphene somehow and you'll just have like the trifecta of awesome.
Oh, man, it'll be the 2014 is the year of that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I want to know if Elon Musk is making any comments about it.
He hasn't yet, but I gotta believe that there's a Hyperloop somewhere in the world that's getting excited.
Yeah, well, I was thinking of him for space travel, but yeah, Hyperloop too.
Yeah, space travel too. Right. So it'll be interesting. It'll definitely be something to track over the next decades. Hopefully they come up with an explanation for it soon. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. But, wow. That is cool.
Yeah. So
that's exciting.
Yeah, so now are we moving over? We're moving on, aren't we?
I think so. I feel it.
Do you want me to go, or do you want to go first?
You go, then I'll go, then you go.
All right, sounds good. So, wasn't a great week for Samsung. Well, wasn't a terrible week for Samsung.
That's an understatement.
Not a great week for Samsung. So, you know, the iPhone 6 is sort of like stalling sales for quite a few people around the world, even though it hasn't been announced yet. But it's actually worse a lot of times for these companies is when the rumors, because people get so excited that, you know, they don't necessarily, you know, sometimes they'll do what you're doing. They'll wait and see. Maybe when the actual announcement comes, you realize, oh, it's not what I want it to be. You'll probably realize it is what you want it to be, which means you'll end up buying it. But if you realize it's not what you want it to be, finally people will go and buy the Samsung or whatever Android phone they want. But until then, it just freezes sales in general. That being said, it turns out Samsung or Android phones in general aren't being frozen, especially in markets like China. It's just that people aren't buying Samsung phones anymore.
Yeah.
So Xiaomi, Xiaomi. We should learn how to say their name.
I actually think this is less of a Samsung story and more of a Xiaomi story.
Zombie story. Yeah, I would agree. Basically, so Xiaomi is a Chinese company. They are Chinese not just by origin, but also in business philosophy, in that they just steal everybody's IP and build it for less. And they're pretty flagrant. But they're basically playing Samsung's game and doing it better, which is copy Apple, sell it for less. And in China, there tends to be quite a bit of nationalism that goes on. So you get a Chinese company, not to mention the fact that it's a communist country. So there's even further incentives to support the home team. And they're starting to sell phones like crazy, and they're eating Samsung's lunch.
In my MBA program, I took a marketing strategy class, and I loved it. It was a fantastic class, and you learn about, marketing strategy. And part of the class, though, was playing the simulation where they split us up into teams, and we had these theoretical products, and for each of the products, we got to choose different dimensions, I guess. And I think it was basically price and quality were the two. And then there was market, I think, was the third one. And so you had a product, and you would determine, like, okay, we're going to spend this much money on the quality, and then you could then price it, which would determine your profit. And then there were different markets that had demand related to each of those markets. And then if you wanted to, you could spend more R&D dollars to jump to the next generation product, which in theory is better, right?
Right.
And you could either focus on adding features or making it more cost effective, or, some combination of the two. But it's a total simulation, right? We're playing around with widgets type thing. And what was interesting about it is it was kind of an oligopoly, which is an oligopoly is when you have a few companies selling to a lot of people. Monopoly being one company selling to a lot of people. Duopoly, you have two. And we often see for smartphone markets and in the game console that it really is kind of a duopoly with a third place triopoly type thing in there. So then there's a thing called perfect competition, and that's where you have lots of companies selling to lots of people, and that's when things are good. So for everybody. It was an interesting game, and what was fascinating about it is kind of in the onset of it, you had to pick a strategy. Very early on, right? Are we going to be the quality with a ton of features? Are we going to be the low-priced volume company? Are we going to go after market A, B, or C? And are we going to go to multiple markets? And are we going to have multiple products for each of the different markets? And so so you got to make these decisions. And we played around, I can't remember. It feels like it was like around every 2 or 3 days. And we played this simulation for like a month. So fairly long in length, and what was fascinating about it was you start going and you pick something and go, and then as the game goes on, you can do market research and you can kind of see where the demand is. And what we found was in the second generation of the product, pretty much almost all of us, except for like one company, I think, all chose the same market to go after. Well, because it was a nice, it was an attractive market. And we weren't thinking, Nash style game theory,
Right. Yeah.
Kind of missed that one. Yeah, and
y'all went after the blonde, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. And as a result, none of us did very well. And then there was one company where they went after, you know, it was like the third best market or something like that that no one else went after. And they just started to run away with it. You know, because, you know, they were massively profitable. And now it was like, you know, they got like two or three generations ahead of everyone. And so now it was a different game. Yeah. And so then we were left with like, you know, now the real game theory starts, right? I feel like we're playing rock, paper, scissors. We're like, okay, we all picked rock. What are we all going to pick next?
Right.
Like,
because now everybody's thinking, you know, do we want to go for the second best market or the first best market? Cause...
Yeah, it was tough. And so that entire story, which by the way, we came in last place, so there's that. And nice. And of course he tied grades to your position. And
oh, that's awesome.
Well, thankfully there was also a presentation component to it. And so I actually, because I'm technically inclined, I got a video camera and we did a reality TV show presentation where I just showed a video. And so it was kind of fun, you know, it's like making these decisions and what to do. And we had our whiteboards and then we had individual, you know, interviews and stuff where we were talking about what we learned and what our thought process was and where we were going and our frustrations and stuff like that. You know, it was like this little 15-minute video. And it was, like I said, I have skills in that area. And so it was actually really well. So we ended up getting an A anyways. And so
nice.
Yeah, because he was like, well, if it was just on your performance, that was bad. But clearly you learned something, and you demonstrated it well and creatively, so that gets you points. So we're like, yes. So I find, like, Samsung is in that position that we're in, or we're in, you know, when we play that game, where it was like, clearly Apple has a strategy, right? It's no secret. We all know what they're doing. And to be honest, if you're going to go toe-to-toe with them in that space, it's not easy. Because they build their good quality high-end products. You can go toe-to-toe. Don't get me wrong. You can do it. There's money to be made in that space. But they're going to be relentless. Year after year after year, coming out with anchor, like we were talking about earlier in the show, right?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, you know, bigger screen, better quality screen, better, faster processors, better camera, better battery, and it's going to look cool.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's like, that's quite the list, and it's just going to be constantly, and that's like, you know, one of their six products they're focusing on of their, you know, 30,000 employees, or probably more than that. But anyways, you know, so they're a known quantity, so it's like, all right, where do we go after next? And there's a clear, obvious market in China, and you know, so you could see where Samsung's, you know, they spread themselves a little bit and we're like, all right, we're gonna hedge our bets. And now they find themselves like they've got this other company who has done the whole sole focus, we are going after cost, we're not worrying about features, we're not going to add cool stuff, we are focused on the cost side of that spectrum, and they're coming in cheaper. And because of that market, I know, like you said, nationalism clearly plays a role, clearly price conscious as well. And they're starting to do really, really well in that space. And so Samsung, in my opinion, they're sitting in a crossroads similar to what we were in that game where you're like, okay, we've got competition on both sides of this. Where are we going to carve out and become the best in the world at? And, you know, and own this particular space and be happy with that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, like I said, Apple's done that. I feel like, and it seems like, Xiaomi is, that's not their name, but, I feel like they're doing it too. And they're saying, yeah, we're going to make it up all in volume and it'll work just fine. And if you look at their numbers, it seems to be working. We'll see if it's sustainable because it's still they're still new up and comers, and I feel like they've been flying under the radar, and now they're no longer under the radar. You know, but heck, they could just sell to China. I think they'd be happy and be very profitable. I don't know what you do is from a Samsung standpoint. Like, where do you just jump to the next thing, or do you dig your heels in and say, no, we're gonna grind this out and we're gonna make it work, and we're gonna actually be better.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Mean, it's oh man, Xiaomi. That's what it's supposed to be, an SH sound. I guess.
Xiaomi? Really?
Yeah, that's yeah. Which actually, it's funny now that I think of, now that I think about China, the countries I do know in China.
Xiaomi.
That, yeah, I believe it's what I'm reading right now.
All
right, might be
I'm going for
this
it.
Website might be lying, but
could be.
What was I gonna say? Yeah, it's a difficult question for Samsung because it's like they're struggling in the two biggest markets in the world, India and China. Obviously, they, you know, things are going the wrong direction, and they're still doing very well in China. They're the second biggest seller. It's just going the wrong direction. India, they're having a hard time really getting their foot there. There's a lot of different companies competing on a lot of different levels. It's sort of still the Wild West. There's no definitive winner. You know, and because Google is getting better and better and better at making sure that everybody kind of stays on the Google, the vanilla, you know, stays as close to the vanilla Android as possible, you know, you're getting this, the side effect of that is it's more and more difficult for Samsung to differentiate themselves on quality or features. You know, and it's this kind of long-term perpetual problem that they've got of, it's hard. It's really hard to how do you differentiate yourself, you know, and other than just becoming the cheapest, and especially when you can't become the cheapest, because Xiaomi's gonna beat you, you know, left, right, and sideways on it. And you know, one of the threats of Samsung to Apple has been the fact that it's a country owned, a state owned or state backed, you know, company. And Xiaomi's the same way, man. If you gotta figure out how to undercut on price, you just get a government-backed whatever, and all of a sudden you're, you know, because it's the, you know, the people are buying it, and it's good for the government long term.
But nobody wins that game. It's not a fun game to play, and sure, consumers win in the short term, but it means they lose out in the long term because you're not going to do research, you're not going to go above and beyond to try to make something even greater and better. You're just going to continue to play the price game. And I think we're not at a stage yet in the phone market where you want to do a pure price game.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's still space to differentiate themselves, and they're not. They're having a hard time figuring out how to do that. But it's not, you know, it hasn't been built into their DNA up to this point to be a real market leader in new technology. You know, unfortunately, one of the side effects.
You know, that's funny. I was just gonna say, for a while I was a little frustrated that HP got out of the phone game, and you know, talked about getting back into it, but ultimately, like, it doesn't seem like they're going to. And it's kind of like the more I watch, the more I'm like, that was probably a good thing. It's just too late, and there's nothing that HP can add if we're honest about it, and that's okay. We don't need another loses money business, really. We don't. Stop.
Yeah. 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 But so speaking of businesses that lose money, so Samsung actually Samsung and Microsoft have gotten into a little bit of a spat, because so, you know, Samsung, as they're trying to figure out what to do in the future, and there's no clear answer here. I think what they're gonna do is they're gonna try to keep, you know, driving down price, and I think they're gonna do what they got to where they got. They, by just throwing a bunch of different stuff to the wall, seeing what sticks, and copying the best that they can find, and just hope it works long term for them and marketing. So there's this problem that they're running into, because so Google, when they started, you know, when they built Android, they infringed on a number of patents, as has been well chronicled over the time. Some companies they went toe-to-toe with, like Oracle, because Oracle basically wanted them to, you know, wanted to claim it. Oracle, I think, rightly was saying, look, this is just Java. You stole Java. And Google's like, no, we didn't. We renamed it. But with other companies and their IP, It made sense to just cut a deal and say, yeah, okay, every time somebody sells a device that has this, they're going to, you know, chip you some bucks. And one of those companies that they cut a deal with was Microsoft. And Microsoft owns the IP on a couple of the different pieces of technology that Android runs on. And so every time you make a phone that uses free Android, you pay Microsoft for the pleasure. For a company like Samsung, who's producing a tremendous number of Android phones, that's a pretty good deal for Microsoft. They're, you know, even when they're losing, they're winning. And it's put this into this weird world, because Windows is free. You know, Microsoft is good enough at what they've been doing and what they do, and has been doing it long enough where they're not infringing on anybody's IP. You wouldn't have to pay any licensing fees. And Windows Phone right now is free to use. One of those deals where Samsung is actually, it's cheaper for them to build Windows phones than Android phones. But nobody's going to buy a Windows phone.
Right, so which Samsung is exactly what I was thinking.
So Samsung is stuck in this place of trying to figure out how to not pay Microsoft for Android. And Samsung believes that Microsoft opened themselves up for just this maneuver. Basically, what they're saying is, once Microsoft bought Nokia, Samsung stopped paying for Android on the premise that Microsoft became a direct competitor by getting into hardware. So up to this point, it was just a software-to-software thing. And effectively, what Samsung is trying to do right now is, legally, they're attempting to convert a commercial contract dispute governed by U.S. law into a Korean regulatory issue. So up to this point, it was an IP commercial contract that been based in the United States, and that was under the agreement that Samsung was paying Microsoft. As soon as they became direct competitors on a global market, though, Samsung saying, whoa. We can't be paying a direct competitor. That breaks our Korean regulatory laws. This isn't fair anymore. So it gives you an unfair competitive advantage. So we shouldn't have to keep this contractual law and not wanting to wait for the courts to disagree with them. They just stopped paying up front.
And I feel like that's a recipe for getting into trouble.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! So Microsoft has not appreciating this, has decided to sue, and they're trying to figure out how to get Samsung into a position where they have to pay for it. I think it's funny. Looking at all this, I think what's going to happen is you're going to watch Samsung all of a sudden get embattled in all the same sort of lawsuits across the globe that they've been in with Apple for the last couple of years. But now it's going to be Microsoft. I think what they're going to do is they realize that what they did with Apple basically worked. If you fight hard enough in enough different fronts, you lose some, you win others. But long term, you get to keep doing what you want to do, and it is cheaper for them, as far as they're concerned, to not pay Microsoft than it is to pay Microsoft and not have the legal battles. The legal battles are cheaper. Which is bad.
I wonder how you're able to convert it from a U.S. law to a Korean regulatory issue.
I think it requires expensive
lawyers, I'm sure, but
yeah. I think at this point it's just sort of a they think that they can use that argument in enough courts around the world because the only weapon that they have, Microsoft, similar to Apple, is to get the product, you know, to basically say they're using illegal technology, they're using it against contracts, you can't sell what you're selling because you're not paying for it.
Well, Microsoft doesn't say don't sell it. They're just like, just give us the back payments and continue to pay us. They're okay with that.
Right. But the ultimate club, the biggest club that they can use is
yeah, that okay, I see what you're saying.
You know that the and Mike Apple went straight for this, which was to get products banned in different countries. And I think Samsung's game here is that their argument, whether it's fair or not, is basically any phone that you sue us over will already be on the next generation, if not the third generation of the two generations after that, by the time any settlement comes down. So if we have to pay you for it, bummer. If the product gets banned, who cares? Nobody's buying it anyways, and we get to keep doing what we're doing and making money. And I think you're gonna watch Samsung do exactly what they did to Apple, and I think get away with it again. That being said, how long can a company do, have practices like that and continue to succeed in the market? I mean, it's sort of like, yeah, their phones are selling great, but Apple has moved all of their chip manufacturing away from Samsung, which is a huge hit to the semiconductor part of Samsung. There are consequences there long term. Are they enough to get them to eventually change? Who knows? We'll see. But
man. Well, I'll be honest. I hope Microsoft wins and wins big. And that they're flexible. They're like, you don't have to stop selling. We just want our money that you contractually owe us. And you know what? If they can get it, the rule to change because they're a direct competitor, you go, okay, fine. Change the rule. Until then, keep paying us.
Yeah. 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 I would agree with that.
Oh, yeah. Plus, I hope there's some sort of interest or damages thrown on top of it all just because. But I don't know.
I think it's
possible. Samsung likes to play loose and fast with those rules. They really do.
Yeah. Yeah, they do make Google look like the good child of the lawbreakers, because Google, they're at least willing to play ball. They're gonna rip you off, but they'll pay you eventually.
Yeah. Wow. I am naturally a rule follower, and so I read stuff like that, and I'm just like, oh, what are you doing? I like what you said. It's not a success. It's not. That doesn't set you up for long-term success. It's just not healthy. And that's not good.
And it's frustrating because you sit there and you go, it doesn't seem necessary for victory. You've got a good product. You've got a good situation. And, yeah, it costs you a couple extra bucks. But, and like you said, vet it completely. Go to law. Go to court. Try to figure out, say, no, this isn't fair anymore. And try to have a court come down and give you a ruling. And it's one of those things where if you can prove that no, it's not, it's anti-competitive, Microsoft may owe you money in the end. But the reality, I think the simple reality of it is that's not the strategy that they're going to take. They don't care if they win and lose at this point. They've already proven that the strategy of stealing intellectual property, claim it wasn't, claim you didn't, and then just get entrenched in these expensive battles until it doesn't matter anymore and move on, because the technology is moving so much faster than the legal system. That's the real frustrating part for me is it's
well, again, I don't think that's a big deal. They're not gonna try to ban their phones. They're not gonna go to that level that Apple did. A, because they don't want to. They just want the money. And B, they've got to watch what happened when Apple tried to do that. And so they're not going to do that. They're going to say, no, whatever. Pay us for all of your phones. Done. You owe us. Call a collection agency type thing.
Yeah.
I don't see Microsoft using the same strategy as Apple did. Apple was very narrow-minded in that regard. And that's why they ended up not winning to the extent that they wanted to.
Yeah, I agree.
It was one of those, Apple won the moral victory. Congrats. But I think at the end of the day, like you said, things like this, Microsoft's not going to open up to them. They're going to make their lives difficult, and rightly so.
Yeah. 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 I hope it works out for Microsoft in this case.
It would be nice, too, to be honest, if Google would step in and just be like, Samsung, you represent us. You are a part of our family. There are certain expectations of behavior, and you are not meeting those expectations right now. You need to shape it up, or we'll take the hit, you know, and do a moral grounds type thing. You know, I mean, you need to be that type of, you know, partner. But Google's also proven that they don't care too much about that either.
Well, and not to mention it's, you know, Google's success right now is predicated on Samsung's success. You know, their problem is it's like they might disagree with the tactics. They might think it's lame. But if they managed to upset some Samsung enough, it's, you know, that's material damage. That's like, you know, your shareholders, your company could get actually, you know, roughed up pretty bad getting caught in that crossfire. And, you know, you may agree, you may disagree, but I think, you know, ultimately their concern is, you know, let Samsung do what it's going to do, because, you know, as we talked about with the whole problem, the whole Samsung dilemma for Google right now is that the, you know, tail's wagging the dog. You'd like to think that Google's in charge, but I just think they're not. I think that's I guess that's what I'm trying to get at, is that it's not necessarily a question of, you know, who's the moral, you know, what's the moral thing to do. It's just a matter of, you know, at this point, Google controls certain parts of aspects of Android, but who actually controls Android, who makes the big decisions, who's the, you know, who's the alpha dog in the group? I have a feeling that Samsung is more often than not. And, you know, and I, you know, they're such a big company. They've got so much reach, and they are such a big component of Android's success overall, that it would be very, very, very difficult for the Google execs to look at Samsung and say, "Hey, shape up, be different." And Samsung could just look at them and said, "Who are you? Go away." Mm-hmm. You know. Wow. You know, as much as Tizen has been a pretty flaming failure, you know, the simple truth of the matter is that they could still reasonably quickly fork Android and, you know, and really run roughshod over Google and cause a lot of problems, you know, if Google got too carried away with righteous indignation. But, oh, it'll be interesting to watch. It'll be interesting to watch these companies as they move forward with this new phase of battles, especially since it seems like the Google one or the Apple Samsung battles are kind of cooling off, and
yeah,
that whole war is, you know, they've gotten rid of so many lawsuits on so many fronts. They're paying attention to a few small, hotly contested ones that, you know, the only ones that exist now are the ones where they actually think they can come to some sort of a reasonable agreement on how to move forward in the future. You know, everything else, all the other ones that they view as superfluous, they've just completely dropped on both fronts. You know, they're moving in the direction of trying to figure out how to coexist.
So. Yeah.
But anyway, so. Talk to me about our success on the interwebs.
Yeah. So Variety, which I'm guessing is a magazine or something. they commissioned. What?
Yeah, it's kind of an important magazine from a pop culture perspective, but go ahead.
Okay, all right. That's cool. They did a study. Commissioned a study where they did some research, and they reached out to teenagers between the ages of 13 and 18.
Just the definition. That is usually the category that I would describe as a teenager. Somebody between the ages of 13 and 18.
Yeah, so they wanted to know who the most popular stars were. You know, people. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, or shows or whatever. And they had a bit of a surprising result. that was five of the most influential figures for these teenagers, American teenagers, by the way, are all YouTube favorites.
Nice. Where did we rank?
We were near the top 10, plus or minus a few hundred thousand.
That's what I like to hear.
Yeah.
Doing good.
Yeah, we were there. So, you know, obviously the big news here is for at least teenagers, YouTube is bigger than Hollywood, which
yeah.
is pretty crazy. By the way, the number one group was Smoosh. Does that sound familiar to you?
No. This whole study makes me feel old as somebody who will be turning 28 in 9 days.
There you go. Then they were followed by Fine Bros. That's like us. I mean, that's scary close.
That's close. That's close.
And then there was the PewDiePie. They're from Sweden. Let's see here. The highest ranked non-YouTube star, ready for this, Paul Walker.
Yeah, that's just weird.
Yeah. I don't understand that. He's influential, I guess. We'll see what happens next year. And then the top-ranked woman was Jennifer Lawrence. I feel like I should know who that is. That name just sounds familiar. Let's see if... Let me pull up a picture. Oh, Hunger Games.
Of course it was Jennifer Lawrence.
Probably
She's
from...
She's the Mockingjay.
Probably from her work in X-Men. But yeah, so again...
She was Mystique. She was the main character in Silver Lining Playbook. She's pretty good. She's actually talented.
That's something.
What?
It's something. I'm not going to put acting on there as one of them, but... Anyways, yeah, not one of my favorites, but apparently she's influential to those teenagers. She's just very
Okay. I mean, I don't want to get too far off the rails here, but like, what movies have you seen her in?
So I saw her in Hunger Games.
You've only seen her in the Hunger Games movies. Yeah.
And X-Men.
Okay. Did you see Silver Lining Playbook?
Jimmy Fallon one of the nights. No.
Yeah.
I've never
Did
even heard of that
see...
movie.
What? There was an Academy Award winner. She was
that
like,
doesn't mean I've heard of it.
The star of it. What about American Hustle?
I saw a trailer for that one.
Ah, jeez. You see, it's unfair for you to like, you know, to undermine somebody's acting skills when you only watched the movies that she's not known for being a good actress.
Well, what can I say? If those are the two that I saw, I was not impressed. Where's my incentive to spend money to see the others?
All right,
so,
fine.
You know, whatever. That's okay. You can say that you like her acting skills. We don't have to agree on this one. It's okay. I don't have to like every single one that you like. It's all right. The point of all of this, though, is that at least for teenagers, it would be interesting if they expanded the study a little bit, but that probably costs money that they're not willing to spend. You know, is that YouTube is clearly a big influencer in their lives, and that's different, at least from other studies that have been previously done. Hollywood was the big... you know, the big winner, and YouTube's taking over here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's going to be really interesting. Earlier this year, you know, Disney made a pretty big move buying a giant YouTube channel and all of its different, you know, subsidiaries and stuff. You know, and I think the Hollywoods of the world, the Hollywood execs of the world are figuring out that, yeah, this is definitely happening and this is where it's going. This is the transition. And And the forward-thinking companies are embracing this, you know, and they just, you know, especially the media production guys, they're figuring it out. They're trying to get on the game, and if they're not doing it themselves, they're at least trying to buy the guys that are doing it. And I think, you know, it's just, it's one of those things where, yeah, I mean, this is where it's going. You know, we talk about Netflix and the success of Netflix and its ability to change the media landscape, but to ignore the power of YouTube and this sort of, you know, and the ability for these types of groups to, you know, performers to get market saturation, get, you know, mass market appeal without the traditional without your more traditional delivery routes. You know, it's just one of those things where, like, yeah, this is where it's going, and it happens to be the high school kids that are figuring that out. But I think the reason why you don't really need to expand it beyond 20, you know, beyond the 18-year-olds, is because what they're doing is they're getting accustomed to getting entertainment through these different routes. And so the, you know, Variety's asking the question, okay, 20 years from now, how are people going to be in, you know, taking in entertainment? Is it going to be through the big networks on channel 36 of, you know, of your cable, or are we going to be willing to look at YouTube, or is it going to be Netflix, or is it going to be, you know, who are the stars going to be? Who are the people that are going to be influencing media and setting the pace? You know, it's interesting. Like, so I was looking. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is failing fantastically, which I'm satisfied by. Because I don't like it when they go and, you know, run roughshod over my memories. But it's one of those things where at the same time I was kind of looking at it in comparison to movies like Guardians of the Galaxies, which did very well. And it's funny, you know, the production budget for Guardians of the Galaxy was $170 million. And it just seems difficult to conceive that it could cost that much to make a movie like that. You know, it's just, it's huge. There are these massive projects with tremendous amounts of work. You know, and most of that money isn't going to, you know, a couple of small people. Most of that money is going to an army of, you know, makeup artists and special effects people and construction guys and materials for different this and, you know, different that. You know, it's not just it's a full budget. You know, and the reason why I mention that is because the only reason why Guardians of the Galaxy the movie was possible is because somebody on a much tighter budget made and syndicated a comic strip comic book called Guardians of the Galaxy. And they flushed it out and they built up a fan base and they proved it as a story. And then they used that as the precursor to the storyboard. The storyboard and kind of, you know, in the script acted as this way to sell a $170 million budget. And so I guess what I'm trying to say here is I don't think movies, big budget, big, you know, TV shows and big budget movies go away. I don't. I you know, maybe that's me being a Luddite and being completely off base, but I think there's still going to be a place for it. What I do think you'll see happening is that right now Hollywood looks to books, they look to comic books, they look to these low cost ways of creating the media as sort of the proving ground. Is it a good idea? Is there a fan base? Is it something that we can take and flush out more and turn into a movie? And I think what you'll start to see is a lot of these YouTube stars prove themselves as comedians, prove themselves as action stars, prove themselves as storytellers, and then they'll take their ideas, their talents, and their fan base, and they'll move into the larger parts of Hollywood. They'll move into the bigger budget TV shows, the bigger budget movies that will be disseminated through the more traditional, you know, movie theaters, Netflix, whatever comes after the cable companies collapse. And, you know, and that, because those infrastructures don't go away, it's just the traditional cable goes away. And I think that's what you'll see. And a perfect example of that is have you seen those AT&T commercials with the you know, the classic one was, you know, I
don't think so.
I want to talk to the manager. What?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, there's this AT&T commercial, and there's this brunette chick who's they're pretty funny. They're pretty well done, and it's just people asking her questions and her giving these really quick, snappy retorts. And it's just sort of this inner exchange, and they're pretty cute. But as far as commercials go, but the girl, the actress, is actually one of the stars of a YouTube channel, and one of their like regular things is let's talk about something different, and they're hilarious. They're great videos. I subscribe and I had been a fan of her and her team before they started, these commercials. Now the commercials came on, and I got this great like, oh my gosh, AT&T is so cool. They found this, they're taking this, big YouTube star to the next level, and it gave me a good feeling about AT&T seeing her succeed because I was a fan of her, of her comedy on YouTube, and I'm just like, wow, it's interesting that, great marketing in action. But I think what you'll see is more of that. You'll see these bigger companies with the bigger budgets looking at the people that are setting the pace, that are building up a fan base, and then they'll grab them as they're starting to, prove themselves out in the wild west of media.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because it's still one of those things where if you get a YouTube channel that actually does a ton of advertising, they're going to have more success than a better YouTube channel that does none. And so there's still going to be place for the guys with a lot of money and an eye for talent to come in and take a pretty good show and turn it into something a lot bigger.
Right.
It's the reason why Hatchet still exists as a publishing company, despite Amazon's attempts to destroy them. But so Windows 8, this is apropos of nothing. Windows 8 is not doing great. We've talked about this a couple of times, and about the cycle of bad operating system in Windows ME, then good operating system in XP, bad operating system in Vista, then good one in 7, bad operating system in 8, then good one in 9. And there's been a lot of noise that people have been making about the quality of 8 versus the quality of Vista, because those are the off cycles. Those are the bad ones. So which one's worse, Windows 8 or Vista? And early on, they were pretty much paced together as far as uptake was concerned. And at times, Windows 8 has beat them. But currently, for the second straight month, quarter or month for month, so X number of months after their launch, Vista was beating Windows 8 on the uptake this month after their release, which it kind of has to do with some, that might have to do with just the current, where you are in the Christmas cycle and everything. But in general, it's bad news. And the major
driver,
which is
interesting because it kind of contradicts what we talked about last week with the Best Buy story, where they were saying that sales are actually up and doing better. But
yeah, it's hard to tell what's exactly going on, except I think the bottom line, and from what I'm gathering, is we're getting a Vista-esque performance, which is to say really depressed, really not doing as well as anybody had hoped it would be. There are times, there are quarters, there are months where they're doing better than Vista. There are months where it's doing worse than Vista, but I think the big point here is that this is no Windows 7. There's no there's no light at the end of the tunnel. It's not turning around. It's not getting better. People aren't accepting it. I think people are just sort of like, yeah, this is bad. and people just aren't excited about it. People aren't moving forward and aren't, they're not trying to embrace it. And when we talked about that whole idea of, you know, them talking about Vista or talking about 8 less and their different media places and their different blogs and stuff, you know, once again, you're just going to see more and more of them trying to, more and more of Microsoft ignoring the fact that Windows 8 exists until Windows 9 comes along, I think. You know, it looks like you're going to have one or two more big releases of Windows 8, but I don't know. They'll be subdued launches at best.
Hmm. Good riddance.
Yeah.
Let's move on. No more Windows 8.
But where Windows is struggling, our favorite Canadian company is turning it around. BlackBerry officially this month has stopped retracting in their job force, and they have begun modest growth. So they're for the first time since Apple lit up their life, has stopped firing people, and they've started to hire again.
That's shocking.
It is quite shocking. Well, I mean, it's not, you know, we've been talking about them, you know, more and more the last couple of months, them sort of leveling out and their stock prices leveling out and everything. And they've got new devices coming and they've got new directions and they're trying new stuff. So it's, you know, at some point you're financially stable, and in order to grow, you got to start hiring back people who are going to be good engineers, and you know, you got to do something. I do like the fact that we still pay attention to BlackBerry just because it's such a disaster when there are a lot of companies that are BlackBerry size that you don't even know the name of. Nobody cares about. They are so clearly to the point of being under a tremendous amount of media scrutiny, even though they are just a nothing of a company at this point. But I think unless something crazy happens, you might actually see them move into this phase of their existence that's similar to a lot of other companies out there, which is to say you'll survive as a tiny niche doing nothing. Mm-hmm.
You'll have a few thousand people who still make money, and that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a wrong with shadow that. Of what you used to be.
Yeah, and that's, hey, you know, that's, yeah. At least you don't have the same name as what you used to have. Jeez, what a company. What a company.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, jeez. And then this is another fun one. So, and it seems quite appropriate given the state of my dwelling with its smart lights. We're talking about these new smart buildings, so obviously, I think the smart home and the consumer grade intelligent building stuff is cool. It's the most exciting for me because I can buy it and use it, and it matters. But smart building technology is a big deal for bigger companies or bigger buildings and more stuff to manage. So all sorts of cool things like locks, lights, power systems, AC. All sorts of different things that are integrated together on a network, all working together. But the real problem is that there's this definite new terrible form of attack in that if somebody can gain access to your building or some sort of, you know, some part of your building, they've got a really cool piece of leverage over you. So let's say you're a company, you're some sort of a tech company. And you come into work Monday morning, you walk up to the building and you run your card to unlock the door so you can get in, and it doesn't work. And next person comes up and everybody tries it and you can't get into the building. So something's wrong with the locks, you don't know what, but whatever. So somebody finally decides, well, we'll just unscrew the doors and we'll take the doors off and we'll get in. So you get into the building and you try to turn the lights on, and the lights don't turn on. Oh, and it's sweltering hot because the heater's on. Somebody has taken over your building, and that's when the emails start coming. You've realized your building has been hacked, and you need access to your computers because, you know, time is money and your company is down. And which, you know, CEO gets an email that says, hey, look, we got access to your building. We've changed all the passwords. We control everything. We will give you the passwords if you give us $500,000. And so there's already been cases of this where, you know, these major companies have been basically held for ransom to get their buildings back. Google's Australian office hack last year should have been a wake-up call for smart buildings. Two security researchers exposed Google's vulnerable building management system, by going through the Tritium Nagera AX platform, which I don't know what that is, but it's a part of what these smart buildings are working on. The researchers had access to multiple panels. They were able to view blueprints of the building, the water pipes within the system. If they wanted to, they could have even clicked buttons labeled active overrides, active alarms, schedules, and more. This was not a malicious attack, so no damage was done, but the possibility for a damaging security breach was there. Yeah, so it's not just taking over your building, but it's more to the larger idea of, sometimes there are actual systems that are working in these buildings that, you know, can do damage, and you can melt down server farms. You can maybe, you know, destroy motors and stuff. And then even more to the point, Target's hack, actually, they lost all that data and everything, began at the point of entry was someone gaining access to the building via the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system. Wow. Without digging a little deeper, it is easy to point to the technology installed as the major issue, the only reason this breach happened. In reality, without a manual intervention, the hack could have been contained within moments of occurring. So basically, somebody had already overrid the alarms and the quarantine actions, and, you know, there was some pretty bad actions on Target's side, which is why the CEO stepped down and a bunch of people got fired. That being said, it still was this smart building technology that acted as the entry point to get into the larger network that allowed them to get onto the computers, that allowed them to get onto the card scanner machines, which, I don't know, it's just interesting. It's one of those things where, you know, we talk about the potential for the Internet of Things to be hackers' wonderland, but you don't really think about it much. You know, what does this actually look like? How can they do that? But don't worry, the hackers are thinking about it and trying to figure it out. So I just wanted everybody to have one more thing to worry about as they go through their week.
Appreciate that, man. That's nice. Oh, hacking buildings. Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we need. Like you said, it was kind of inevitable. So get it over with now so we can start building the security required.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
I like it. And then finally, Foursquare released their new app this week.
Oh man, I did notice I opened up my little folder that Foursquare is in, and I was like, what is that app? Oh, it's still Foursquare. Interesting.
Yeah, except you can't check in anymore. That's done.
Yeah, which is weird.
If you want to do that, there's Swarm.
Yeah.
But Foursquare is a personalized Yelp.
Okay.
Is essentially what it is now. You can add tags, and it, you know, if you have checked in previously, they kind of know what you're interested in. And so, in theory, you can go to a new city or a new place and be like, all right, I want to find something to do. You open up the app, and they'll have personalized suggestions for you.
That's a good idea. I mean, because, you know, Yelp is cool and all. I don't actually use Yelp because I disagree with their business practices. But, you know, one of the things with, you know, I use Google generally, Explore the City, which is basically Yelp, but run by Google. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, it'll give you a bunch of different information, but it's not necessarily, you know, tuned to me. I like certain types of food that don't interest me as much. and it serves it up all the same. You know, it tries to break it down by category to make it easy for you to navigate to what you want. But it would be pretty cool if the top five suggestions were, you know, kind of food I'm in the mood for, which is pizza. The answer, Google, is pizza. That's what I'm in the mood for.
Yeah, so I actually just decided to open it up to see what it's doing. And so when you first open it up, it has you go through and it says, tap a few things that you like. So I'm choosing ice cream, boneless wings. I like root beer. And ooh, I like mac and cheese. I like desserts, I think. We'll leave that one off. Do I like mozzarella sticks? What do you think? That should be a yes, right?
Yes, I like mozzarella sticks.
All right, next. Hold on while we find places you'll love nearby. And it's got little cool animations and stuff. And now it is loading up my list. Let's see here. Tom's Peacock Bar and Grill. Something I should check out.
Nice. I like hot dogs. I like Peking duck. This is difficult because I like a lot of these things, man. Chicken parmesan.
Regal Albany Cinemas, that's nearby. I do like to go there. I feel like so far it's not telling me anything. Great shopping, Winco. That is great shopping.
That is great. Sunsets, that's another type of food. I like Ethiopian food, though. I like tacos.
Yogurt Extreme, I go there all the time.
Drunken Noodles.
Burgerville, delicious.
Show more. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Check this out. I can do even more. This is awesome. I like watermelon, vegan food, like noodle soups, like papaya salad. Man, they are just nailing it. You know what my problem with this is, James? I just like most types of food. Like, most of the foods that I'm saying that I'm not clicking on right now are foods that are just like so incredibly unhealthy for me, I just try not to eat them in general, but they look really delicious. I like tortas and falafel. This is difficult. This is cool. I like this whole idea of, I got to sign in with something. Facebook, obviously. Let's see here. Okay. Oh, it looks like you have a Foursquare account already. Dang it.
So they've changed up their app. You can no longer check in, though I did check in like 1,600 times, so there's that. I haven't really left a lot of tips, but that's okay. Block 15, I do like them. There's a couple tips for them. Market of choice. Yeah, so it's a new app. And totally new focus. They're getting into, instead of checking in and becoming the mayor, you leave tips. And if you have a lot of your tips liked by others, you become an expert in your area and whatever that subject type is.
Yeah.
And so the new goal is to become an expert, not to become a mayor.
Oh, man. There is a bar within 20 minutes walking distance of me. That is highly recommended. That's kind of exciting. I didn't know there were bars within walking distance of me.
There you go. You're welcome.
I will probably wait until it's not the night before the Monday work to go exploring.
But it's probably smart.
Yeah, that's cool. Hey, you know what? They already sold me.
Boom. Just like that.
That was easy, Foursquare. Well done.
Nice. So there you go. Next time you should check it out for when you're looking for, like, what do we do? Open it up. It'll tell you.
Yeah, definitely.
Pretty cool.
Very cool.
But anyways, there you go.
All right, man. Thanks for bringing that to me.
Yeah, man. My pleasure. All right. I think that's all we got, man.
I agree. I'm happy.
Good. Glad to hear that. It's my goal. Sweet, everybody, thank you for joining us. We genuinely, truly do appreciate it. My name is James Furlow. What was it again? My brother.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
Yeah. My green ninja turtle brother, which we just kind of ignored that one and moved on. Yeah.
Rightly so.
That's okay. That's all right. That guy, Matthew Furlow, is my brother. And so we will talk next time.